This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. The word is escalation. The concept is escalation cycle. It's part of watching sovereign states build towards full conflict. It begins not where it ends. And the question now is escalation for three capitals, Moscow, Kyiv, and Brussels. We begin with Moscow because the escalation looks to connect with a report, an odd report that we have from the New York Post, quoting a man who appeared on Russian television. I read the report. North Korea has offered to send 100,000 soldiers to bolster Russia's invasion attempt in Ukraine, Russian state TV has claimed. The pariah state's offer of military assistance could not be immediately verified, but it was seized upon by Russian defense pundit, a man by the name of Igor Korochenko. There are reports that 100,000 North Korean volunteers are prepared to come and take part in the conflict, Korochenko said on Russian Channel 1. I stop there because, Professor, escalation is a diplomatic ploy until it isn't. This is just a statement. We don't have it verified. We're not seeing the 100,000 get on troop ships. We have no way of penetrating it. But it was there on Russian TV, meaning that it was heard by Russians and others listening. Is Russia prepared to escalate Ukraine, to bring in allies, something like in the Spanish Civil War when several states volunteered to work for one side or the other? Good evening to you.
Good evening. The Russians, I think, are looking for every possible way to salvage the situation that they're in. They can escalate vertically, which is to say militarily. They can also escalate horizontally, which is to say bring other countries into the war, or they can escalate qualitatively, which is to say start paying attention to factors that aren't military. I think it's important to understand what escalation means and what it doesn't mean in strategic usage. Clausewitz in 1832 wrote that violence has an innate tendency to move to the extreme. That's very near the beginning of his great book. And why that is difficult to say, but he identified this as being the chief problem with war, which is that it increases in violence and scope unless somehow reason is brought to bear to harness it or to stop it. Once nuclear weapons were invented, then a lot of people began thinking, because as Bernard Brody, the great American theorist, put it, he's the one who coined the word escalation in this context. He thought of an escalator, a nuclear escalator, but the thing about it was that it took you only to the top, and there were no exits. And there was tremendous fear, which I think is justified, which is that once a war reaches a certain level of intensity, that intensity will just keep increasing. Think of the extraordinary and actually, to some extent, wanton violence of the bombing campaigns at the end of World War II. They were not really of military importance, but they reflected something about human nature. Now, Brody concluded, therefore, that deterrence was essential. And deterrence is a way of frightening an enemy. It's designed to put fear into the enemy's heart so the enemy will not attack you. Robert Osgood, another very important thinker on these topics, thought about how to limit nuclear war, and he coined the concept of escalation dominance, in which he said, we have to be in a position where we're the driver, and we control how fast escalation proceeds. And it was very clear that the White House in some, they've gotten hold of these concepts third or fourth or fifth hand. And it was quite clear at the beginning of the war that rather than being concerned with how this war was in Ukraine, rather than being concerned with how we were going to terminate it or how the Ukrainians were going to win it, the greatest concern seemed to be that it would not turn into World War III. And as we've said before, it seems highly unlikely that a war that is so confined geographically and is so limited in the technologies that it uses, and which in no way threatens, say, Moscow, or doesn't threaten Russia at all, that it could lead to World War III. But the concept of escalation, unlike deterrence, is something we use to frighten ourselves. And what I think we can see now is that Russia doesn't have the same concern. They're looking for a way to beat Ukraine. They're not looking for a way to avoid escalation or world war. They just want to win. That's what Putin wants to do. So we see that militarily, they continue massive use of artillery. And of course, artillery has always been, since the 19th century and before, Russia's great strength. They use terror strikes with their missiles because their missiles are not very well guided. They've taken hostage a nuclear reactor, which introduces a totally imponderable. We've never seen anything like that before. Now, escalation, I would argue, is Putin started the war, and the U.S. has responded. But we've responded in a way in which our chief concern is not terminating the war, but it's avoiding escalation. And we have done this by preventing the Ukrainians from matching the Russian capability militarily by limiting the supply, by greatly limiting the supply of artillery, HIMARS, aircraft, and so forth, because we feel that such supply would somehow be escalatory. In fact, the Russians pay no attention. They just figure, well, it's a good thing if the Americans give less. But we've twice now canceled a test of a Minuteman III missile because we're afraid that it's going to have an escalatory effect. Well, we think of escalation in a sort of mechanistic way, or we think of it like a game of checkers or something, whereas Putin is driven, I'd have to, if you'll pardon the expression for Mr. Putin, it's ideology, it's belief, it's a passion that he has about Russia and about this imposter race, the Ukrainians, who don't really exist and who pose a threat to his whole system. He is not living in the same universe of talk about strategy and war that we are in. So I would argue that our concern with escalation has overshadowed what we should be doing, which is trying to figure out how to terminate this war. And the way you terminate it is by winning it or by making it clear to the other side that it's impossible for them to win it. Meanwhile, Russia controls weapons supplies. Theirs they can control directly. Ours they control indirectly because we are very frightened of giving or turning over any weapons to the Ukrainians that the Russians might not like. So that means that our whole approach is not active or reflective, but it's responsive. In other words, it's what Russia does that determines what we're going to do. Russia also controls the battle space, which they have extended so that all of Europe feels threatened, and particularly the countries that are border on Russia. And I think that Central Asia is rattled by Russia, too. Russia also controls energy supplies, and they have been escalating their use of energy threats against their many European customers. They control the flow of food from the Ukraine. They are creating a tremendous humanitarian crisis of refugees from Ukraine and also people who are short of food. Because Ukraine was the breadbasket of ancient Athens, so it's been a key component in world food supply. So I would say that Russia and the Russia is quite willing to do whatever it takes to win. They don't worry about escalation. I don't think Putin does, although several Russian strategists have written very, very cogently about it. Whereas we are, in a sense, we have a completely different set of concerns than Mr. Putin does. These are non-intersecting. And what the result is that the war has become indecisive.
Just a detail, however. 100,000 troops would satisfy questions that have been asked for some time about manpower for the Russian side. Would that, in some fashion, introduce something into the battle that we've not talked about before? In other words, the Axis powers gathering together, and we have to then consider there are other people who could volunteer. That would be Hezbollah, that would be Iran, that would be Syria, actors in Africa, actors in South America, and then there's China. Would that be acceptable escalation? Do you see the U.S. and Brussels, the NATO, accepting that as logical?
Well, it is logical in a way, but it's a hideous and highly dangerous logic, because you mentioned the various groups that could go in on the Russian side, and they're having problems because they're mercenaries, the Wagner group or Wagner group. They've just had their top guy killed. They're already having to pay people to fight for them. I'm sure that North Koreans come cheaply, although the gossip on the Bamboo Network is that these would really be Chinese troops.
Well, would that be an acceptable escalation? In other words, it works on
both
sides.
I don't think it would be. I don't think any of this is acceptable. This would extend the war over all of Eurasia, and it would create a crisis in East Asia at the same time that we have at the East Asian end of Eurasia, just as we already have a crisis
all
at
right.
the
Let's
western
move.
End. And you have a lot of countries that border on Ukraine and on Russia would just, I don't think they would stand for this. But it would be immensely complicating.
Let's go to Kiev for escalation.
Okay,
I'm speaking with Professor H.J. Machender, International Relations, the three capitals involved in the conflict in Ukraine, Moscow, Kiev, and Brussels for NATO. When we come back, this is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.